March. It prohibits retaliation by a county against a community mental health or developmental disability program that requests mediation or takes other actions to address contract disputes between the county and the program. You have the -3 amendment that was worked on by Paul Snyder and Martin Taylor primarily, and that came after our discussion on the 12th.
Okay, and we have Martin and Paul here today, so would you please come up and introduce these amendments for us?
Chair Fisher, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martin Taylor, and I'm here today representing the Community Providers Association of Oregon. We once again appreciate Chair Fisher for being the chief sponsor of this bill and bringing it forward before your committee. We're trying to address a concern that you passed legislation in 1997 to allow providers to dispute contracts if the contracts they're getting from the county have additional mandates on them that were prohibited by Senate Bill 141. And our concern is to make sure that folks who are going through that appeals process don't end up falling out of favor with the county and either losing their contracts or facing another form of retaliation. We believe that passing legislation will make that a less likely occurrence. And this bill came before you as a fairly heavy stick. We responded to the concerns of counties by making a number of changes. Punitive damages were removed from the bill. The statute of limitations was reduced from 7 years to 2. Attorney's fees were originally for plaintiff only. Now it's for prevailing party. Folks filing a tort claim under this act will be expected to follow the Oregon Tort Claims Act. And we tightened the definition of retaliate, taking out the language includes but not limited to, and narrowing that language to just say retaliation for the purpose of this bill means. There were a number of smaller changes as well, but I think the overall effect was that as a tort claim act, it's not an overly aggressive tort claim act. In fact, it will essentially require a provider to feel so aggrieved that they were willing to risk having to pay attorney's fees, go through the process, and at the best they could hope to recover damages that were actual damages incurred. So it's not going to facilitate many claims, but I think it does do its job of discouraging retaliation, and for that reason I think we've still got a good bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. I think Mr. Taylor has fairly well characterized the changes that have occurred in the legislation. It would provide that county may not retaliate, which is defined to mean materially alter or terminate the contract or fail to renew, solely because the provider has engaged the use of mediation through Department of Human Services or requested dispute resolution or initiated a contested case. It eliminates the reference to punitive damages so that punitive damages are no longer available in this kind of a situation. And I think the other characterizations that Mr. Taylor has given you are accurately reflect the changes.
Questions? Thank you, gentlemen, for the hard work you've done in the last few weeks.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Appreciate that very much. Anyone else wish to testify? You didn't get signed up? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 470 and open a work session on Senate Bill 470.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Morsett,
I would move Senate Bill the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 470.
Senator Morsett moves the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 470. Is there any discussion? Dissent? Will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Brown? Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator Pardo? Senator Stone?
Aye.
Senator Morsett?
Aye.
Senator Pitcher?
Aye. The motion carries, and Senator Brown and Senator Clarno are excused. See, this has no revenue impact, so being it, we've got a, that's right. will...
I'd be happy to carry it.
Go ahead and entertain a motion to...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Send the bill as amended.
Okay, I will. I move Senate Bill 470 as amendment to the floor of the Senate with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Morissette moves Senate Bill 470 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Brown? Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator Carno? Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Marchette?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye. Motion carries, and I guess being the chief sponsor, I should carry it.
You should carry it.
I will ask Senator Shields if he wishes to be a co-carrier, since he is also a chief sponsor. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 470 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2374.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2374 requires the Department of Human Services to reimburse certain rural health care clinics for prescribing and dispensing prescription drugs and requires health insurance coverage for prescription drugs dispensed at certain rural health care clinics. This declares an emergency and is effective on passage, and this bill currently has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
I will call Ed Patterson and Dr. Bruce Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ed Patterson, and Dr. Carlson is working in a clinic over in Eastern Oregon today, and he has not been able to be here.
Then I will introduce his letter for the record. You're going to read it.
That would be perfect. And just to give you a little background, I think it's pretty brief. And he asked that I enter into the record on his behalf, but we appreciate you putting that in the record, Mr. Chair. Now, Dr. Carlson, who is here to testify on the House side, has spent most of his professional life over in Eastern Oregon administering medicine. He works for an urgent care center over there and is a medical consultant on two rural health clinics over in that part of the state. He's one of the most experienced and knowledgeable about the operation of rural health clinics, I think, that there is in the state. His problem, the bill itself addresses a problem that he has experienced over there. There are many rural communities in Oregon where medical clinics exist with no local pharmacy, or there is limited access to prescription medications. Presently, OMAP and private insurance companies reimburse pharmacies for prescriptions, but do not reimburse clinics for dispensing take-home medications. This requires residents to travel great distances to obtain urgently needed medication. This is especially burdensome for the elderly and recipients of the Department of Human Resources programs. Passage of House Bill 2374, that's a typo there, A, will simply require the Department of Human Resources and private insurance carriers to reimburse rural health clinics for providing urgent medications when there is no pharmacy available. I do not believe the state of Oregon and the private insurance carriers will experience any additional costs. Both are already paying for the prescription drugs in accordance with their own policies. In fact, there may be a savings to the state by not having to reimburse patients for the cost of travel to another community to obtain prescription medication and or an emergency room charge. This bill was supported by the Oregon Pharmacists Association and the Oregon Rural Health Association in the House Committee. Amendments proposed by the health insurance community were adopted, and presumably they are now in support. OMAP testified that, and I quote, the department supports this bill to improve pharmacy access to rural areas. The bill passed the House with no objections. That concludes Dr. Carlson's testimony, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to respond to any questions if I can.
Okay. Questions? Yes, Senator.
I'm looking at the amendment. I have a question about the 15 miles difference. Is that, that's not changed in the amendment, is it, or is it?
My recollection is that did not change. The mileage did not change. And the purpose for that was just to, it was an arbitrary number, basically, but just to make sure that there was some limitations. If there was an accessible pharmacy closer than 15 miles, they would use the pharmacy and not prescribe themselves.
Okay, I guess the 15 miles is far enough away to ensure there would be no pharmacy within town, but not too far away to have to travel. I mean, that's okay. I was going to say, why even worry about mileage? But I guess you want to be sure there isn't a pharmacy within.
We wanted to make sure that the Pharmacists Association would support the bill, and that was one way to do it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Burdick.
Why do we have a referral to Ways and Means on this? Does anybody know?
I guess Senator Burdick missed our chair's meeting this morning.
I'm not a chair, Mr. Chairman.
Due to the budget situation that we're in, we started out with a $50,000 limitation, and it appeared that many, many people were trying to come in just under the $49,999 level, and we quite obviously don't have some of the latitudes we had to allow some of the incursions of this type of bill into the budgeting process like we did before. So basically they're requesting that and pretty much demanding that we get a bill with any price tag on it at all down to the Ways and Means. And
I don't see any fiscal in my file on this.
Well, I realize what it says up here, but we've got a couple of people testifying here, and I would ask Jim Edge to go ahead and come up, but that's pretty much the ruling, and I guess it's just going to be incumbent to us for the, that have bills down there to make sure that we ride the Ways and Means Committee hard enough to get these bills heard.
I mean, I don't see any fiscal, so.
Well, let's let Jim have at it here. He may.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jim Edge, for the record. I'm the acting assistant administrator of the Office of Medical Assistance Programs in the Department of Human Services. We do support this bill. We support increased access to health care in rural areas, and this bill does do that, and we support the bill. There would be a very small amount of administrative oversight that would need to be provided by OMAP as a result of this bill, but we feel as long as the electronic pharmacy management and payment system is used in this process that it would come within the governor's balanced budget, and we could support the bill. Originally, the language of this bill included, I think, a reference to prescription drugs for acute care, and I think in the amendments that have been made, that's been changed to urgent care, which would probably restrict the impact of the bill even more so than it was before. So we don't see any significant impact of the bill. There was a very small fiscal impact statement on the first version of the bill. On this version of the bill, we have no fiscal impact.
So my question remains, why are we sending this?
Well, I...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee...
Can't answer that.
Again, this subsequent referral was added by the President's office. You could certainly request that they rescind that subsequent
yes.
referral. However, the President would make that determination.
I think we should do that, Mr. Chairman, because the chances... This sounds like a very good bill to help provide, you know, prescription access in rural areas. And I'd hate to see a bill with no fiscal impact or just inconsequential fiscal impact be buried in Ways and Means.
Well, that was some of our feelings in the chair's meetings. I certainly am not averse to trying it. We can make a bold attempt and a bold assault on management and see what we can accomplish. So.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wasn't at the chair's meeting, but it would seem to me that if you're going to hold out that kind of requirement, that you should have at least the requirement to have some kind of quantifiable fiscal, like even, you know, $1,000. It should be there. There's nothing here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm game.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Morrison.
I'd like to add some support to Senator Burdick, because some of the discussion that we had was, in fact, the word rescind was used at one point, and that has happened, and they will look at that, and I think there's a lot of mixed feelings on the part of leadership to send a lot of stuff down there that will cause them more work, and so I think the rescind option will probably be satisfactory with the leadership. based on what they said.
Well, there were some references to what good were the substantive committees. They didn't have some latitude. So I'm agreeable to this. I appreciate your testimony, Jim. We have one more person to testify, Tom Holt.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Holt with the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. Just really here to clarify the record that we do support the bill for a variety of reasons, but primarily because there really is an access issue in the rural communities that are served by these health clinics. And the rural providers have also given us assurances that they'll have the appropriate systems in place to be able to handle a wider dispensing responsibility than what they now have. So with that, we're in support of the bill.
Okay. Thank you very much. Further questions?
Yeah, may I?
Yes.
Any more comments? 15 miles, was that your idea?
Chair Fisher, Senator Morris said, I believe that came out of the rules that have been in place for rural health clinics for some time, and so we agreed to continue that in this bill.
Oh. Is that 15 miles over curves? Or
is the crow flies?
I saw it.
I mean, what it amounts to is essentially what Senator Morris said, described a few minutes ago, is it's far enough that it does not place the rural providers in a situation where they're competing against each other, but close enough that somebody isn't going to have to go to the next county to get their prescription.
I saw a cartoon one time of a fellow explaining to the game warden, he had a fish about this long and it had huge fins on it, and he had his tape measure running. It was 36 inches over curves. Some of the roads we have around here, you can be pretty close and still be 15 miles away. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2374 and open a work session on House Bill 2374.
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash three amendment.
What? I don't think we have an amendment on this. That was already done by the House, I believe. So
I would move to rescind the referral to Ways and Means and move the bill to the floor with the Duke House. Or the Senate with the due passage.
Okay, can we do that in one motion?
You sure can.
Okay. Senator Morris said it has moved that we rescind the referral to the Ways and Means Committee and send the Senate bill, House Bill 2374, to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? I think we had a little discussion here, Senator Brown, about our discussion, but the amendment in the House took away whatever fiscal there was to it, apparently, so we're going to save Ways and Means some time.
Right.
Or try to, anyway. Further discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Brown.
Aye.
Senator Burdick.
Aye.
Senator Farno. Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Senator
Aye. Motion carries, and Senator Starr will carry the bill. Thank you, Senator Starr. Close the work session on House Bill 2374 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2996.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2996 limits a person to two consecutive terms as a member of the State Board of Denture Technology and allows reappointment to the board after a three-year hiatus.
Now we have Jim Davis to explain the bill. Technical bill here.
It's a pretty easy one. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Davis, representing the United Seniors of Oregon and the Oregon State Denturist Association, as well as Portland Gray Panthers. We strongly support House Bill 2996. The seniors and denturists sponsored this bill because currently, under statute, denturists and public members are only allowed to serve two terms on this board. And this dates back to the old days when it was an advisory council, and the law has remained constant. This is the board that oversees the denturist profession and is very involved in that. We have a very strong, involved board. But what is happening is that since they're only allowed to serve two terms, is that we're running out of denturists who are able to serve, who are willing to serve. We have 110 licensed denturists around the state, and this board has now been in existence in some form for 23 years. So we have a lot of qualified denturists who want to serve again, who maybe served in the 80s or something like that, and are unable to do so or so now. So we would like to pass this bill, essentially allow someone to serve two consecutive terms, then have to take time off, but can come back onto the board at a later date. So we'd urge your passage of this bill.
Yeah, I think this makes sense on some of your small membership boards. You don't have a real problem until you get down the line a few years, and there's not that much turnover, not that much reentry or new entries, and it does pose a problem.
Yes, sir.
And not everyone sometimes is able to serve on a board for various reasons, so you certainly don't have 110 potential.
No, we don't, sir.
Board members, you probably have more like 50 potential board members or something like that, be my guess, or maybe even less.
Well, Senator Fisher and members of the committee, yes, that's pretty much it. We probably, if you're to look at the active membership of the denturists who are really involved in policy and activities of the association and of the board, you're probably right. I think that's a very good guess. Probably half the members that would be interested in serving are taking part, and maybe even a little more, but a lot of them have already served their terms, and so, yes, this will help a lot.
Further discussion? Have any more questions? Anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 2996? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2996. Thank you, Jim. And I will call a work session on House Bill 2996.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2996 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morissette moves House Bill 2996 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Objection? None. Will clerk call the roll?
Senator Brown.
Aye.
Senator Burdick. Senator Clarno. Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
And Senator Fisher.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick is a co-sponsor of this bill, and I think she would love to carry it.
All right. We will, in her absence, register a yes on her part. And
good. Yeah,
as a carrier, I'm sure.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
yes.
She
can probably figure out.
Okay. I think it's. We need to take a vote here, do we not?
We just did.
Okay. Got me. Turned around here. Okay, the motion passed, and Senator Burdick will be the carrier. Closing.
All right.
I will suspend my. Closing, do you wish to vote yes on Senate Bill 2996 and join all your members who have assigned the bill to you since you're the first on the list of the...
You're a co-sponsor.
Okay, I vote aye.
We were caught in the act.
I vote aye.
And the motion carried, and will you also carry the bill?
I would certainly.
Okay, Senator Burdick will be the carrier, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2996 and... open a public hearing on House Joint Resolution number 48.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Joint Resolution 48 urges the governor to allocate a portion of monies reserved under the Federal Workforce Investment Act of 1998 to provide training for health care providers. I've contacted Representative Mona Sanderson's office because I know that she wants to come down to hear this, so hopefully she'll be here soon.
We do have one person that has signed up to... speak on the bill, and that's Joe Bell. Would you like to come up and see if you can talk long enough to get the representative over here? Keep us entertained until the representative comes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I was actually kind of hoping that Representative Mona Sanderson could come, because the last time we did this, she provided most of my testimony, and I didn't have to say much. For the record, my name is Jill Bell, and I'm with the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, and we're just here today to testify in support of HJR 48. And this will direct the governor's workforce investment dollars, which are federal workforce investment dollars, to providing training for healthcare workforce. As probably all of you are aware, from the last couple of sessions, we've been hearing a lot of testimony about workforce shortages in the healthcare industry, and those shortages are only increasing as time goes by.
I agree.
The other thing I wanted to bring to your attention is I know that staff has provided you with a couple of different reports, and I only wanted to mention them for the record so that and that you have them so that you can spend some time reviewing those in your leisure, I would imagine. The Governor's Workforce Investment Board report is the first one. It's called Taking Aim at a Growing Crisis. And they had a healthcare sector initiative working on a report studying the issues around the workforce shortages and making recommendations. Their summary report is very short and to the point. The second one is last session, the legislature actually established an interim legislative committee dealing with the healthcare personnel shortages, and there's a report from them as well. And the final report I'd like to bring to your attention is the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council's report talking about the nursing shortages and what the nursing profession themselves are putting forward as recommendations and the issues around that. So I think those are three good reports that will bring you some more definite information and answer a lot of questions about the numbers and the actual impact. The key point that I want to make today is that the healthcare industry, not just the hospital association, but all segments of the healthcare industry, has been very proactive on this issue. We have not been waiting for the state or other organizations to come to our rescue, so to speak, and deal with this issue. Many of the organizations, including hospitals, are working together with, are doing individual projects to develop healthcare workforce educational training programs, and are doing a lot of things in a collaborative manner as well. So we are not looking at the state to do all of the work for us. However, one of the things that we are beginning to realize is that this is a huge, huge issue that even the industry working together is not going to be able to correct on its own, that we do need some support. And the workforce investment dollars that the governor receives to do workforce training, we believe is would be a good use to put it would be a good to put it to use in the healthcare industry. One of the pieces of my testimony reflects a survey that we've done recently on positions in the hospitals. And in a list of over 200 different positions in the hospitals, we took the top 11 with the highest vacancy rates, and we took them times the average salary across the state in hospitals. And out of the 62 hospitals that we have, there have been 30 hospitals responding. And the total of that amount in salaries was $76.4 million in salaries that we could be providing to the Oregon economy if we had the healthcare workforce. We think that's pretty impressive when that's just one segment of the healthcare industry. And again, we believe that having the workforce dollars directed in that way would be an economic stimulus for Oregon, and it would also help provide health care access to Oregonians. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Representative Norris Anderson has come, and we'll ask her to come up and join you. We gave Joe the requirement that she was to keep us entertained until you could make it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lori Monis Anderson, state representative from Gresham District 50. And I just want to comment. I know a resolution isn't law. You can't make the governor do anything. But I think we as a body have to remember we have one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation. And we have a critical workforce, healthcare workforce shortage. And House HJR 48 addresses this issue. More health care providers in the Oregon workforce really mean more jobs that pay high wages. A nurse makes right around $49,000 a year. We have the five most critical shortage areas include nurses, of course, physicians and surgeons, radiological technicians and technologists, physical therapists, physical therapy assistants, and aides. And this bill provides a solution by urging, not mandating, but urging the governor to spend federal money that we will be receiving for educational programs in healthcare occupations. OHSU told us that they had 800 applications for 150 positions. So we have people who want to come into the nursing field, but we just don't have the capacity. This resolution, I think, is a statement, and we've already been talking with the governor's office, encouraging him, and he says that he is going to be putting healthcare as an area to work on. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there a question? That puts it pretty plain.
Good. Good. Resolution should pass.
Now, excuse me. Those people who are making all that money are not state employees, right?
No.
Or are they?
No.
They could be.
If they were public health nurses.
They would be.
But we're the greatest shortage is in hospitals.
Well, I would just say good for them. I appreciate the fact that the compensation level is where it is deserves to be. It's moving in that direction.
Yes.
So, I support your effort.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else wishing to testify on HGR 48? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing on House Joint Resolution 48 and open a work session on House Joint Resolution 48.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brown.
I would move HJR 48 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Brown has moved that we send House Joint Resolution 48 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, any objection? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Brown.
Aye.
Senator Curtis. Senator Farno. Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
And Senator Fisher.
Aye. And Bill asked Bill to carry the bill, so we'll let Bill carry the bill.
Thank
Senator
you.
Morissette will carry the bill.
Thank you.
You got me. You got me.
And I will let that argument fight itself out in the Democrat caucus. With that, the bill passes, and we will adjourn our committee and the hearing on the bill, or the session on the bill.
See, we know a good bill when we see one.
Yes, we don't mess around.